This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
John McFarlane,
Finlay Mason,
Roger Mann, and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, John, now you came to Palmerston North, you said, 48 years ago.
That's right. I was already, by modern standards, an old man at that stage because I was approaching 40 at that stage. Mm-hmm. I'd been had a practice in the South Island.
In Wanata, as a lawyer.
Yeah. As a lawyer. And I got the word that in a small town called Waimate, and I got the word that they were closing the Waimate courthouse down. So I decided to move up to a larger city because I was more interested in doing court work and common law work. And my wife had connections with Palmerston North through her family. And so I decided to come to Palmerston North. I actually got the job here as a replacement for Mike Behrens. Mike Behrens, who is well known in this town as a court lawyer and a very popular man he was, and became a judge and is still active in a minor capacity as a judge after a career as a judge. And I moved into his place, but of course he took all the court work with him. And so when I came to the firm of Innes Dean, as it was in those days, the only remainder of the old Innes Dean practice, I'm sorry, it wasn't Innes Dean, it was Innes Oakley and Lawrenson in those days. Laurie Lawrenson was the only member of the old firm. Laurie was a real practitioner of the very old school, very upright. He had done a lot of court work. The firm's reputation was founded on old Jimmy Innes, who was apparently a very pugnacious Scotsman who founded the firm back in, I think, the 1880s, I think it was. And he eventually took in a partner, Oakley, who I'm told by old members of the staff used to stand at the head of the stairs at 8 o'clock in the morning with a stop with his watch in his hand, checking the staff in.
So it wasn't a 40-hour week.
Well, it was a full 40-hour week in those days. There was none of this 35-hour business.
I don't know if you want to talk a lot about law or about, because I know you were also very active in various other areas in Palmerston.
I was always reasonably athletic, and I was interested in sport, and I'm very thankful for that because I am still relatively mobile and managed to take part in most physical things fairly without difficulty. I don't know whether you mentioned that I was now 87 or just coming up to 87. And I'm very thankful for the active life I have
led. So you're not suffering from lots of sports injuries?
Well, I have some sports injuries. I have a broken toe which they wanted to amputate, and I refused to let them do it because I was running at the time. And amazingly, an amazing amount of your thrust for running comes from your toe.
Yes.
So if they amputated your toe, I would have lost my thrust from my toe. I must admit there's not a great deal of thrust in other parts, but...
it's more endurance later on, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I took up. I'll tell you something about the old firm, Innes Oakley and Lawrence.
Okay.
When I came here, the conveyancing work The court work went largely with Mike Behrens, but at that time it was an old established firm, and all the conveyancing and estate work was handled by Laurie Lawrenson and another partner, whose name I won't mention this time, but he also left shortly afterwards because he was seen by Laurie Lawrenson walking hand in hand with another man's wife, and that sort of thing was simply not acceptable in those days. So he was edged out of the firm. So it meant that I no longer had so much court work to do because I was obliged to come back into the firm and handle estate work and conveyancing work.
Okay.
Which was fairly sharply divided from the court work in those days, because you have to spend so much time on court work that you can't really attend to your clients.
Okay. So, do you want to talk more about the law?
Well, I seem to have been gabbling away.
You seem to be going that way.
without getting very far. Yeah. Well, shortly after I came here, I've always been interested in theatre. And I'd taken part in quite a few productions in Christchurch. And in my varsity days, I worked with Naya Marsh in her Shakespeare, some of her famous Shakespearean productions. When I came up here, I continued my interest in theatre. So I was quite ecstatic shortly after I came here, to know that they were forming a professional theatre, which was the start of Centrepoint Theatre.
Was that in George Street?
That's right. It was run in a restaurant, a cafe restaurant,
yeah.
And the theatre, it was thought that having the restaurant would at least have some audience.
You were in right at the very beginning of Centrepoint?
Right at the beginning, yes.
This was in about early 1970s?
Very early 70s, about 72 or 73, I think, yes.
Okay. So when it went, and it was professional from the start?
Or? Yeah, that's right. It was intended to be professional.
So how many staff?
And the policy was adopted that we wouldn't do combined amateur. In fact, that was a sore point with the local theatre community, because as a professional theatre, we felt, I think this was the National Theatre's professionals' attitude too, that they wouldn't do combined production with amateurs, because that was taking bread out of the mouth of the professionals.
So is this like sport? You did it and you were paid. Did that mean then that you were no longer allowed to do amateur theatre?
No, in sport. That was the case in sport. Definitely, I played some great football with two of the greatest players who should have been All Blacks, but they were debarred. A chap, Stewart, who played in South Canterbury should have played in the All Blacks. In fact, I consider he was better because he had a longer kick than Don Clark. And he was debarred because he had taken part in those days they used to have at A&P shows. They'd have professional sports and for prizes. And athletes used to go along and compete at the A&P shows and get prizes. And they were considered professionals.
Even in rugby?
It was rugby who said they then become a professional sport.
Even if it wasn't rugby?
Wasn't rugby they were competing in. That's right.
Wow.
Pretty tough, isn't it? It would have been very...
That's right.
Well, I suppose that means that any lawyer would be considered a professional actor because operating...
That's that. Oh, I would hesitate to say that. I admit some of the judges look a bit theatrical when they get up there in their gowns.
Yeah.
And but even that, I got beyond the profession when they finally decided to do away with wigs.
Yes.
But I think that was because it was the Aucklanders felt it was getting too uncomfortable in the hot weather.
Yes.
When you formed Centrepoint, did you rely entirely on itinerant professional actors, or did you have anyone here?
We employed, first of all, of course, a director, and for each show we employed a cast of who were specially picked for that production. We selected a play and a programme of plays for the year, and the programme of plays was worked through, and we called for applications for stuff, and the director was expected to know what was going on in the professional world in theatre in New Zealand and make contact with people that he thought would be suitable cast members.
So they were coming, so it was key parts from people from outside,
right.
And then the supporting cast were local,
right.
Part-time.
No, the supporting cast, that was why we had to abandon doing Shakespeare's, because Shakespeare plays, I was always a strong advocate, that, being a Shakespearean trained actor, I was always in favour of doing Shakespeare, and we realised we couldn't afford to do more than one Shakespeare a year, so we always employed... because of the cast numbers, we couldn't afford to employ. So of course you had a lot of doubling up of cast, which detracted from the attraction of the show. Because
and in a cafe, you could only have a small audience.
You'd have a small audience. Yes.
There'd be a lot of volunteer work though too attached to the theatre, was it?
Yes. Yes. There was all the board and a lot of there was great interest taken by people who supported us. Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay.
That's right. And actually, but
all of your technical support was volunteer.
Yes, technical support. Yes. We're running out of time.
No. Okay. So you were saying it was in the cafe. About how many would the audience be?
Oh well, we'd be lucky to get 100, possibly 40 to 80, depending on the popularity of the show. But we'd get about 80 there sometimes for the popular shows, because the amateur people, who were fortunate in Palmerston North that there was a strong amateur group, and they producing quite good shows, very good shows. And people were attracted to seeing good, expecting to see good theatre, and so we, in forming the Centrepoint professional theatre, we wanted to build on that base and raise the standard.
Yeah. Did you have many links with Massey University?
Yes. Well, of course, we got a lot of support from there. That was a strong point that we always made the cast were paid and paid at professional rates.
Okay, and it was only a few years after that you moved into the current premises in Church Street.
Yes, I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was quite a few years. So it was about 2 or 3 years. And then we got the opportunity to go into the old warehouse. It was an old warehouse there, and which, of course, had been related to the railway yards there.
Yeah.
I forget the firm that owned that warehouse, but with the good offices of the City Council, I think rates were owed on it but the City Council encouraged us to move into there. At that time, we, of course, were expecting, and there was a strong move for development of a smaller theatre, because it was realised that the Regent was much too big a theatre for small amateur type shows such as ours, and we couldn't afford to go there. So it was a strong move from both the amateur groups and the professional group that there should be a smaller theatre built, and that of course eventually resulted in the Globe Theatre being built by the City Council.
And in the early days at Centrepoint in their new premises, that was often a meal and play as well, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
In the early days, people would buy a ticket for a meal and the play, or they could just
go in. That's right, yes.
You'd
buy a ticket for the meal and the play. You'd have a meal, yes.
Yes. Yes. Do you know much about the decision for that, or why they decided to move away from that?
Oh, well, there was... we were popular enough that we realised that we were... not really able to cater for audiences, the big audiences we wanted to get.
Okay. I mean, so the meal was just a carryover from your cafe origins?
Yes. Well, we thought we'd keep that cafe origin because sometimes we're making more in the bar than we were.
Yeah. And you relied entirely on... amateur help to do the meal too.
For a time, but then eventually, well, by the time we got to the warehouse, the Church Street place, we were employed a staff, and we always had a full time caterer.
Oh, okay.
Who did the catering.
But Centrepoint's actually developed something of a national reputation now.
Oh, very much so. Well, we, I think this may still be the case, we're the only major professional theatre outside the main centres, the four main centres.
There's been others since, but was it, Dunedin had one that has just now closed?
There had been other ones. I think Hamilton tried to get one and it died, and there were other ones around, but for a long time... The only successful theatre by the Arts Guild was the Centrepoint one, and they regarded us as they didn't expect us to survive, and they were reluctant to put money to give us a subsidy. Fortunately, we did have a subsidy for many years, but they were reluctant to give us because they thought, well, it's all right, very well. So we went down to, I remember going with a deputation to the Arts Council in Wellington, putting forward the case that we had been a training area for professional who would have otherwise been unemployed.
Yes.
And so they regarded us and prepared to give us a subsidy in order to keep us going as they looked on as a training ground for the main theatre.
So would you know of any people who started off and got their basic exposure in Palmerston North and then moved on to be more successful?
Frankly, all of them.
Yes?
I can't remember their names. I'm sorry.
But it was a very good...
The names escape you, but until you after you've finished speaking about them.
Yeah. What about playwrights? Because some have written plays that have...
That was the director's job to make sure that we had playing rights for all the...
But there were some who wrote plays, some local people writing plays?
Yes, there were some first productions. I can't remember any of those, but a lot of the people that we had here, Ross Gumbly was one who's done some very good plays, very successful plays. Mm-hmm. And he had a play on rugby, I remember, that was successful and all round. There's been quite a few plays produced.
Roger Hall, what was his connection? Did he have a connection here, or you just put on some of his plays here? Do you know?
Ross Gumbly.
Roger Hall.
Oh, Roger Hall, yes. Oh, yes, no. He was one of our first productions, I think. We always like to do his plays because they were always successful.
Expensive.
They were popular.
They're very expensive to buy.
They always.
I recall one that Alison Quigan wrote.
Yes, Alison Keegan, yes.
And she was...
She was one, I think, our first really successful director that I remember.
Fargo, yeah. Barmy and Palmy or something.
Yes, that's right.
We walked out at halftime.
Yes.
It was so
and,
awful.
And she did a sequel of that. There's two or three of those she had done, yes.
No, we couldn't stand it at halftime. We went
yes.
down to the pub
yes.
down the road. It was,
that's a shame. I found a lot of those very good. I yes. like the characterisation that they had. Yeah. Some of the actors really... There was one, but I'd have to say, I don't really want to be critical, but I come from Yorkshire.
Oh,
and
right.
in Yorkshire,
well,
they have a very dry... Well, some will say I have no accent either, but I have they have a very dry sense of humour. And if yeah. people are good friends, they'll be sort of competing for quality insults, which is right. all... And if you're insulting people, it's not that you're insulting them, it's you feel you're friendly enough to be right. able to get away with this.
Right.
And there was a really hilarious... play set of Yorkshire people, I think, going on holiday to Paris, and they're coming out with these really funny quips and digs at each other. But I think the director thought these are people arguing with each other, so the whole play was presented as if they were all arguing.
Yes, that was quite a feature of theatre for some time. It was called impromptu theatre, and you put a group of
theatre players.
The theatre sport. That's a little bit. This was a scripted play.
Yes,
but,
right.
But yes, there has been. There has been some theatre sport.
And
you'd put the
actors in a situation and let them tell impromptu.
Give them a scenario
yes.
and let them
but,
go.
But
yeah.
that didn't often work very well because they.
You have to be skilled, I think.
Yes,
they have programmes on television like that with people with
yes,
lots of experience.
Yes.
I mean, so some people are very good at coming out with one-liners and impromptu, and people enjoy, but it's very difficult to sustain it.
Yes, yeah.
So you never became a professional actor?
No. Well, I almost did at one stage long before I came here.
Yes.
But,
not full-time.
So your involvement with...
Have you heard of the Southern Comedy Players?
Yes.
There was a chap, Bernard Esquint, who actually was retiring as a lawyer, and he and a boyfriend formed a company called the Southern Comedy Players, and I was in Waimate at that time, and I went and did a start of a tour. They did a tour around Otago. They used to tour around Otago. And they did a tour, and I went in as a supernumerary just as a fill-in for someone for a little while. But they had quite a strong group down there, and they prospered pretty well in Otago and South Canterbury, yes.
So what was your sort of association with Centrepoint then? What was your...
Oh, I was on the board. I got pulled onto the board. I'd been interested. Well, my original association was, as a lawyer, a chap, Martin Van Hale, was the solicitor acting for them and forming their constitution. So Martin formed the constitution for them, but he knew that I had a connection and had been previously involved in theatre management, and so he asked, and I made a few contributions, very minor contributions, to the drawing of the constitution. So I had a hand in the original constitution, and then later on, after Bob McMurray became, remember Bob McMurray,
indeed,
he became
yes.
chairman. And after the original chairman went to Auckland, I forget what was the original chairman.
I can't remember.
Right. Okay. And then Bob McMurray became chairman, and Bob McMurray was a very good friend of mine, and had been active in theatre with me in Christchurch, and he asked me to come on the board, so I went on the board at that stage, which would have been about 3 years after they'd moved to, or about the time we moved to Church Street.
It makes sense to have someone of your qualifications on a board like that.
Well, yes, I suppose so. I think it was mainly because I knew about something about theatre.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. Did you get much council support then? Obviously, they made the premises available at some terms. But
yes, well, for some time we didn't get any council financial support, and then we made we kept some pressure on, and I remember several times going, making presentations to the city council that we were an asset. This was after we became producing some very successful productions with getting good big audiences, and we were able to say that we're A, providing a cultural benefit to the city, mm-hmm. And B, we were retaining in the city some very qualified and intelligent and successful young people who would otherwise have to leave the city in order to be involved in the arts. And so we were able to make that, and eventually we got a contribution, I think it was about 5,000, and they thought they were making a great contribution.
Yeah. So did the theatre have some ups and downs during this time? Or was it a danger of closing down?
We were fortunately well served by the people we got as directors. The directors did, on the whole, very good jobs. And as I say, they were chosen because they were involved nationwide and had connections nationwide, and it became a network thing, and actors got to quite like coming to here because I think possibly they had a more personal connection with the audience and the board and the director. You had to jolly them up in order to keep them here or get them to come here. But then I think they quite enjoyed it when they were here because they got a good range of parts, because being a small group, and we wanted to do quite as many productions as we could during the year, so we'd have a program of things, and they would get quite a good range of cast. But of course, the difficulty with that is that some of them we weren't suitable for the cast of the plays that we wanted. But anyway, they were sometimes challenged, and so I think we generally were pretty successful in getting young actors, and that was a point we made with the Arts Council, that we were always providing a source of work and training for young people.
We've met the new director there now. He's been to our Rotary Club and had a talk, and impressed me very much. He's right on to it.
Yes. Yes, there's a book just been put out by Peter Hawes, which is, I think he it's published, and I don't know whether he's made a general publication of it, but I've certainly read it. I think it's online, I think. Mm-hmm. See, he's got it online, and he's got a pretty full record of Centrepoint.
A book about Centrepoint.
Yes, about Centrepoint.
Okay.
A full history of Centrepoint. Yes.
Catalogues their productions.
Yes. Well, not only that, yes, he's got yes. Have, he goes it through it production by production. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. That's very good. Very full.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.